Good morning and welcome to Backyard and Beyond. This morning we're visiting with Deb Lamb, and she's social worker for hospice for Unity Point at Home. And good morning to you, Deb.
Good morning, LaVon.
We have to work at that name just a little bit because it's a change.
It is a change. We're not Cass County Hospice. We are Unity Point at Home, or Unity Point Hospice.
All right. But the basic care, the basic purpose, that has remained the same.
That has remained the same. We're the same group of people. We're the same individuals providing the same great care. We just changed our name.
Okay. Well, today, because there are so many things that we can talk about, and usually I think when we talk about hospice, we think about the medicines mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But hospice goes way beyond that.
That's exactly right, LaVon. Obviously, our primary focus when a person signs on hospice is symptom control and managing patient symptoms, keeping the patient comfortable, keeping their quality of life high, and supporting the caregiver, the person that's taking care of that patient. But our services go long after the patient has died. Our services go for grief and bereavement support for 13 months following the death of the patient.
And so this could also go beyond the caregiver. It might be the family surrounding that whole situation.
That's right. Not just the primary caregiver or the person that was taking care of them, but any family member and friends of a person, family members, community people even. We provide grief support to people. What we do is a lot of times we think that, well, if you weren't a primary relative of this person, you're not going to grieve. Well, that's totally wrong. We grieve friends. We grieve anybody that we've worked with, coworkers, that kind of thing. So we provide grief support to all of those individuals. We even provide grief support to facilities like nursing homes. We don't stop to think that sometimes those CNAs or the people in the kitchen or the nurses or the administration in a nursing home get very attached to the people that they've cared for perhaps many years. So we also do grief support to facilities.
You say that. I remember distinctly a nurse who was taking care of my mother after my mother passed away. I found her crying. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, it really surprised me. Yeah. I mean, this is a nurse who does mm-hmm, this kind of mm-hmm. thing, but yeah. So, it's easy to kind of say, oh, those professionals, they can handle all this. You know, they don't need any help.
It's their job. They're supposed to do that. But if they're doing their job well, they're also becoming very attached to the people they're caring for. And it does. They need to have that outlet too.
Is grief for people and handling grief different before the person passes away than it is after?
It is. We have something that anticipatory grief. You kind of know that it's coming, and so your head tries to start preparing your heart, but it's never quite there. You know, we're never ready to let go of someone that we love. But we do kind of grieve all the losses along the way, too. And I think that's what a lot of people don't recognize, is that the person you used to go fishing with no longer can do that, or the woman that you used to have all these long conversations with now can no longer visit with you on the phone. You know, so we lose little things along the way, and so we actually start the grieving process as the dying process begins, and we lose those things along the way. People with dementia particularly have this. They lose that person as they knew them, sometimes for quite a few years before they actually lose them physically. And those are the people that I find sometimes have the hardest time with grieving, because they think, well, this shouldn't be hard because I lost who they were 4 or 5 years ago. But when you have that physical loss, all of those other losses that have come along kind of come back to hit them. And so sometimes it's quite hard.
Mm-hmm. I know every situation is different because every person is different, but how long do we expect people to grieve?
Well, you're going to grieve for the rest of your life. People don't really want me to say that a lot of times, because we think it's like the flu. If you long enough, you're going to get over it. Well, you never get over grief. You get to what we call a new normal. Your life takes on a new normalcy as the grieving process goes on. But you're always going to miss that person. You're always going to grieve them at some points, maybe their birthday, maybe holiday times, you know, the death date, those kind of things always come back.
Certain odors, I think, sometimes remind me of people in my family. Go, oh, and it's just kind of like it hits you.
Yeah, it's a scent, it's a sight, it's opening a drawer and finding something you weren't counting for. And grief is like a wave. And I tell people at first those waves are like hurricanes, and they come and they walk and they about knock you off your feet. But the waves eventually become less. They eventually come less often, but they still lap at your feet. And so even years from the time of the death, there can be a wave that kind of comes, and that person just kind of washes over you, and you mourn again. And that's the way grief is. But like I say, I think most of us would like it to be, and our society would definitely like it to be, that after those 3 days that you're off work, life is the way it was before.
And that, saying that 3 days, that has changed so much. You go back in history, and the spouses and family wore black for a year, and you didn't do a whole lot of things in your life. Mm-mm. And so that mourning process, I wonder if that made a difference in terms of helping the grief process.
I think it did, because mourning is the outward expression of grief. Mourning is the black clothing you talked about. Mourning is when a black wreath was hung on the door. Mourning was when you knew somebody was grieving from their outward signs. And so then we treated people differently. We saw that they were wearing black, and so we knew that they maybe wouldn't remember quite as well, or that they needed more support, or that they needed to have some extra time and attention. But now we don't show that outward signs anymore. Some people don't even have a funeral, so there's not even a time that they can come and have that kind of support. And so what we've done is we've pushed mourning away. We don't want to feel that pain. We don't want to feel that loss. And so if we don't deal with it, we pretend it's not going to be there.
So what do you do to help people? You said you can help people, you know, for at least quite a long period of time. What can you do?
Well, for one thing, we start working with people before the person dies. We start talking about loss and grief and what the signs are and what you can expect to feel. We give people a lot of printed material, and a lot of monthly newsletter comes out, a monthly Journeys newsletter, we call it, that's written by the Hospice Foundation of America, that's very good, talking about loss and grief. And we try to let people know what to expect. We call people on a routine basis. We keep checking in with them. Some people I visit with monthly or even weekly, depending on how what their situation is and what the loss is and how much trouble they're having. We try to help people understand they're not going crazy, that a lot of these symptoms that we have with grief, the physical symptoms, the emotional symptoms, doesn't mean that you're going crazy. It's just your body and your mind and your spirit trying to get to this new normal, trying to make sense of this loss as, how is my life going to be from today forward?
So there are lots of helps that can come along. And again, you're talking about uniqueness, that some people you need to visit with more often, and some people kind of move on in a different way than others. What about prescriptive medicines for the depression, the grieving, and so on?
We do assess for that. We assess for depression. We assess for anxiety. And some of the depression is natural and normal, and it resolves itself after a period of time. But that's the assessment that we do, that if somebody gets really stuck in a depression, then we will recommend that maybe perhaps they try an antidepressant or anti-anxiety if they're having difficulty. Some people have a lot of trouble sleeping, so for a time may need some sleep medication to help maybe not get to sleep, but to stay asleep, you know, those kind of things. So medication can play a role, and that is something that we talk with people with and suggest they visit with their doctor about.
And you're here as a social worker, but you have a whole team of people who can help with that assessment.
We do. We have our nurses, and we have our hospice chaplain who can visit with folks. And, you know, so we do, all the whole team helps try to assess the bereavement needs as well as the needs of the patient while they're on our service.
So if someone has a question, someone has a need, they all of a sudden they say, hospice, I don't know about hospice. how can they contact you?
Well, they can certainly call us. Our telephone number also stayed the same, which is 243-8006. We're still in the same building, the building across from the hospital that the doctors used to be in way long time ago. We're still in the same place. We still have the same people, and they can always get a hold of us, come stop in or call, and we'd be more than happy to talk with them. So.
Okay, and I think it's just really important to remember that hospice is there for people. Sometimes we don't take advantage of those possibilities, and you have lots of help there. We want to thank you very much, Deb Lamb, for helping us understand grief and loss and how hospice can be of assistance. Until next time, here's the thought. Live simply, love generously, care deeply, speak kindly, and leave the rest to God.